Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio show that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Que voy a hacer, je ne sais pas. Que voy a hacer, je ne sais plus. Que voy a hacer, je suis perdu. Being your own boss, calling the shots, valuing autonomy. Today's Career Buzz guests in their own unique styles have found ways to do their own thing. From creating their own companies to producing their own theater productions, today's guests live from their desire for autonomy and ride the emotional roller coaster that comes from choosing to go for the ride. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles. We help people make career and life choices aligned with what really matters. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Jacob Lobachevsky is a fourth-year U of T Rotman Commerce student and project manager of the Business Plan Competition for U of T's Student in Free Enterprise, or SIFE for short. SIFE aims to inspire a new generation of entrepreneurs at U of T and in the local community. Jacob will be joined by two players in the SIFE competition. Paul Weiss is an entrepreneur, stock trader, avid adventure seeker, and holds a master's in business, entrepreneurship, and technology. Paul works as CEO of DreamCube Technologies, a startup building solutions for iPhone and iPad. He was a mentor in the SIFE competition. Vincent Chung started his own company, Shape Collage, in March 2009, and is now juggling the completion of his PhD in computer engineering while running his own company. Vincent is a second prize winner in the SIFE Adventure and SIFE Regional Entrepreneur of the Year. We'll talk to these three entrepreneurs in the second half of today's show. But first, Donna Whiteman's career circles around from acting to public relations, copywriting, branding, business consulting, parenting, gardening, and back to acting. She's starred in feature films and TV shows and is now producing and performing a theater piece called A Couple of White Chicks Sitting Around Talking, which opens tonight, Friday, March the 12th. Donna talks about, quote, those blue sparks of creativity that have pushed me through a beginning of extreme childhood neglect and abuse into a phenomenally happy life that I live today. Donna Whiteman joins me live in our Toronto studio. Welcome to Career Buzz, Donna.
Thank you so much.
So what do you like about your career these days?
Everything. There's nothing I don't like about my life right now. I can honestly say that. You are sitting next to the most happy person on the planet.
So what are you doing that's making you so happy these days?
I think I'm living in the middle of my life. I know I'm living in the middle of my life. I'm working for myself. I'm doing what makes my heart beat fast, and I wake up with a smile on my face. I go to sleep with a smile on my face.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Now, you're doing this show that starts tonight. Is that what's really consuming most of your time and energy these days?
I have three children, two dogs, and a kitten named Couscous. So it doesn't take up all of my time and energy, but it takes up a lot because I'm producing and acting in this show.
And so this career that you have of theater production and acting and parenting, to what degree, Donna, is this career that you have the full expression of who you are and how you want to be in the world?
Well, it challenges me. I'm not sort of meeting the status quo. I used to do that. I used to care more about what I could buy. I make a lot less money right now, but on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm so happy that it doesn't really matter what I buy anymore.
On the scale of 1 to 10, then, where are you on the happiness scale?
On the happy scale, right now, I got to say, 9.5.
That's pretty good. And you're saying it with a big smile on your face, so
it
must be true. So take us back, Donna. How far back in your life does this love of acting go?
You know what? I've got to clarify something, Mark. When you're an actor, I don't love acting. It's what I do. So I don't love it. It is what I do. I do it really well. And when I'm doing it, when I'm acting and I'm creating a character, it's sort of like the best version of myself. You're always Mark, right? Okay. But you're the best version of Mark and the worst version of Mark in certain circumstances.
Depends on the day.
Exactly. When I'm acting, when I'm right in the middle of a character, I'm the best version of myself. So, but I don't love it because it's a lot of work and it's also very challenging.
So how far back then does being an actor go
back
for you?
Way, way, way back. I used to be painfully shy. I quit high school twice because I couldn't talk to anybody. I kept quitting. So when I went for an audition in high school for a play, I got the part, and when I came out on the stage, everyone stood up, and it started there.
Everyone stood up for you, like they clapped, they applauded.
Yes.
And how did that feel at the time?
It felt like I was right there in that moment.
And what happened to all that shyness that you had been experiencing up to that point?
Well, it's still sitting there, a part of me. The worst version of me is when I'm shy, but I've learned a couple of tricks. And when I'm true to myself, I don't have to think about being shy.
Great. So what happened then? After high school, you know, people make choices. What did you do?
After high school, one of my brothers told me to be an accountant like him. So I started off on a trail to become an accountant. But then I auditioned for a theater school after a year into that and went to 3 years John Abbott Professional Theater Program, completed that. And then 3 months later, I was on a daily Canadian soap opera called Time of Your Life.
A TV soap opera?
Yes.
Yeah, that's so weird about the accountant thing, though.
For me, it is.
Yeah.
It's a great profession, but not for me.
Yeah. So what happened when you started acting and being in the TV program? Did you see yourself then as developing your career as an actor?
Yeah, the first time I was an actor, I didn't develop my career. I just sort of took anything that came along. So I wasn't selective. I didn't have an eye on the prize kind of thing. This time it's very different. I'm very goal-oriented.
And so how far did it go back then? Because I know you did end up actually working in feature film. Was that part of that time period?
It was. I ended up doing two feature films in Los Angeles. We shot the interiors in Quebec, and then they flew the cast and crew to Los Angeles, and we shot the exteriors in Los Angeles. So when they edit the film, it looks like you're walking out into the bright L.A.
But it's
sunshine.
Changing complete countries.
Yes.
So Bloody Madonna, Amityville Curse, Vincent and Me.
Yeah.
Those are the names of your
features.
You do
your homework, yeah.
What was it like to work on a Hollywood feature?
Well, it was interesting. We weren't allowed out of our hotel room because continuity didn't want us to get a tan. So there I was in Los Angeles, stuck in a hotel room, literally with a security guard who wouldn't let us out because there's a lot of money in film.
And that's amazing. You never think of that, but for sure it would look pretty weird if one day you had white skin, the next day you're all suntan.
Absolutely.
Or sunburned, worst case.
Yes.
So did you feel like you had arrived? You know, I mean, actors want to get to a certain point in their career, and then there you were in Hollywood. Did you feel like you arrived?
Oh, that's a great question. No, I didn't think that was when I was in my early to mid-20s. I didn't think of arriving. I just thought, wow, I'm such a phony. Here I am in L.A., and I'm from Greenfield Park. What am I doing here?
It's called, in the career world, we call that the imposter syndrome.
That's what I felt.
You know,
I
people feel
that.
Like they're an imposter.
Yeah.
Not really, like, I'm the president of a company. That can't be. I'm a doctor. People,
right.
You know, professionals often feel that.
Yeah,
so you
that
had
was
that.
Me. I had that.
And how did you get over it?
I just put one foot in front of the other and kept doing my best. That's all. That's all I do. It sounds kind of like a Hallmark card, but that's what I do with my life. I put one foot in front of the other and do my best.
Yeah, that's probably good advice for
Is
listeners.
It? Okay.
So what happened? I know things changed a lot in your career, and there was a point pretty soon after that where you really shifted gears. What happened?
What happened was I was doing, we were checkerboarding Tempest and Twelfth Night. I was in a company called Bard on the Beach in Vancouver, BC, and I also had a baby, a two-year-old baby by then, and I couldn't do both well, and I really believe in doing your best, and I wasn't being the best actor, and I wasn't being the best parent, because I was just sort of half there for each of those two things, so I gave it up.
You said, some can be great actors and great parents at the same time, not me, so no. I became a great parent.
I did.
How has parenting influenced your career?
Well, as every parent in your listening audience will tell you, that's, it's probably the biggest challenge and there are the biggest rewards of anything you could ever do. So that's, I've become so much more. But I've had a lot of tragedy and a lot of victories in my life, and all that feeds us, right? Actors and writers, we strip mine our lives in order to bring truth to the characters we write or portray on a stage. And all of these experiences have given me a richness to who I am and yes. to who I bring on stage.
Even your early years, I mean, I mentioned early on in your life, and I don't know what the details are, but you say that right on your website, something fairly dramatic and difficult happened to you in your early life, and it sounds like that has had an influence on your career choices as well.
Oh, absolutely. I've been to hell, and I don't know if you've been to hell, Mark, but it's really, really unfriendly. And when you've been to hell and you're back again, I have a deep sense of compassion for everybody. And I'm very, very, very grateful for every day. And if you make me a bowl of cereal, I'll be grateful for that cereal.
And do you think that expression of gratitude, which we all could probably use a lot more of in our lives, but do you think that comes from your early childhood experiences?
Some of it does. Some of it comes from... I've been loved a long time by a very good man. Some of that comes from being loved well
yes.
for a long time.
Yes.
Comes from just, and coming into your own, that gratitude.
We're talking to Donna Whiteman here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. So, Donna, things did change yet again, and you actually went to school. And you did a variety of really different things. What led to you shifting gears after the parenting role into another part of your career?
Everything I do, Mark, is I put my family first. My children are always first, my children and my husband. So when my children were young, I thought, okay, I need to make money because I like buying things. But what do I do that... What can I do to make money where I can be flexible for my children? So I went to school and became a garden designer, and I did that for 9 years. I called my company The Way I Seed It.
Garden the Way Design. I Seed It.
Yeah.
Gardening. Now, where did that come from? Where did your interest in, like, there you were being an actor with Hollywood credits.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're going back to school to be a gardener.
Why did I do that? I did that because it seemed to be the best option at the time. I sort of rolled with the punches and I thought, okay, I've got two little girls who need me. What do I love? I love growing things. And I think growing a character is the same thing as growing a garden, really. People love growing things, don't we?
They do. I think it's the number one hobby in Canada.
I think it's the number one hobby on the planet, or it should be.
So how did things go for those 9 years as with The Way I Seed It? Was
mm-hmm.
that what it was called? Brilliant.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How did that go for you for 9 years?
It went well, but it was very seasonal, and I didn't want to buy a snowplow because that's what happens with gardeners. So what I did was I did that. It was seasonal, so I thought, okay, I want to work all year round. I'll go to Queen's University. It's only a 45-minute commute, and I'll be a full-time student. And I did that, and I went and got a BA in drama from Queen's University. And then I wrote two plays while I was in Queen's, and one of my plays won an award 2 years ago. And I said to my husband, oh, yeah, I'm an artist. We're moving to Toronto. Say that we are, right? Let's do that, right?
And where were you living at the time?
We were living in Stirling, Ontario, home of the Butterball. And I don't mean turkey. I mean balls of butter.
the Queen's University thing.
Yes.
So you're now a mature student. You've done a whole bunch of things. You've got a couple of kids.
Three kids by now.
What led you to want to come back to university at that stage of your life?
I was unemployed most of the year, taking jobs that I felt didn't really challenge me at all. And I thought, well, if I go back to school, there was no acting there in Stirling, Ontario. So I thought I'll go back to school and maybe with my BA and a toonie I can get a coffee.
What did you study at Queen's?
Drama. Surprise, surprise.
And, you know, we're going to talk to some people who are actually in their university degree in the second half of the show. You know, and it's quite a different experience to come back to university as a mature student. And
oh, yeah.
How did you find that different from your peers? Because you would be in classrooms there with people who might have been 10 years younger than you and with less life experience. How was it for you to be that other student?
Yeah, I had a different focus, Mark, than other people who were younger than me might have in university. I was there to get the job done. So I'd go to class. I had three children waiting for me 45 minutes, you know, west on the 401. So I had to go to class and then leave quickly.
All right, get home. Well, when we speak to our guests in the second half of the show, I want to come back to that thing about getting the job done in university. So you were very focused, got it.
Very.
And you got it, and you got the BA.
Yeah, I did, and I went on to do a post-grad in public relations at Loyalist College.
Uh-huh. Now, what led to that?
I couldn't get a job, even at a Starbucks. Not that I love Starbucks, but I couldn't get a job. So I thought, okay, what do I do now? All right, well, I know. I'll take PR, and I did, and I won the Innovation Award from Loyalist College, and I started in right away working, which was great. But then
so
my
Loyalist
play
College,
won an award.
That was a post-diploma program.
Right?
So just for listeners who may not know about that, colleges are now really pushing hard on these post-diploma programs. If you graduate, say, from U of T with a degree from the Faculty of Arts and Science, and you want to get some very specific job-ready skills.
Absolutely.
And that was it job-ready skills when you went?
100%.
Uh-huh. So what 100%. Did you do with this newly minted BA from Queens and then this post-diploma program? What job did you get?
The first thing job I got was working for the Kidney Foundation of Canada. And I started doing fundraising for them, organized a jail for bail. I got hired to do a children's festival. Anything that takes me too far away from my children, as I told you before, they're always my focus.
Yes.
So I brought it back, closed it in to do the copywriting because I realized that would it's flexible. Versus deadlines.
Yes.
You know,
freelance or did you work for
I ended up doing freelance.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How did that work for you?
Hard work. It's hard work because copywriting is very detail oriented and it's also deadline, but I'm in my home, working out of my home. That part was good. But it worked well because I was flexible for my children.
Yes.
It always comes back to my children.
And somewhere along the line, up bubbles the desire for acting again.
Yes, it was like seeing an old friend that you haven't seen in a long time, and you see them, and you think, oh, there you are. Oh, I remember you. Yeah, and that's when I won the Women's Work New Play Festival. I got chosen by Anne Chislett. One of my plays, Containers, got chosen in 2008, and I had written that play so I could star in it, so there'd be a juicy role for a quirky short woman. And I said to my husband, you know what? I'm supposed to be an actor. I know it. And he said, yeah, let me see if I can get a transfer. And everything went boom, 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 boom. And now here we own a home in Toronto, and I'll always be here, and I'm making new friends, and I love it.
Yeah, you're talking about it like you love it.
And I love it.
It's amazing how it circled back. I'm just trying to get the chronology here, and it sounds like something like 15 years pass between the last acting gig and then coming back to the thing about Containers.
No, it wasn't. I sort of kept my foot in the door. I got an agent back in, I think, 2004 I started at Queen's University. I thought, yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to get an agent. So I started doing commercials. I did a play with called Betrayal, a Pinter play. I played Emma. So I kept my foot in the door. I taught acting for a while at Loyalist College in their Con Ed department. I always kept my foot in the door.
Sometimes in the career field, we call this thing like a kaleidoscope career.
I love that. Life should be a kaleidoscope.
You got the acting, you got the playwriting, you got the PR and copywriting, you got parenting, you got gardening.
But it's all about the same thing, right? It's all about growing things,
yes.
Whether they be words or flowers or children. It's about growing
things. So that's the theme that pulls it all together.
Yes, those blue sparks that we talked about at the beginning, they come out of my fingertips, and that's the creativity. It says on your outside of your office, there's a poster, it says U of T, creativity lives here. And I thought when I came in, wow, I'm home. Creativity lives here. It lives here, too.
We're going to find out more about creativity at U of T shortly with our second set of interviews. Hope is a bird that perches in the soul and never stops singing.
Yeah.
There's a line from your website. What does that mean to you, and how have you nurtured hope in your own life?
Well, there's sort of like when you've been to hell as a child, as many of your listeners might have been, there's sort of like a broken sticky outy bit, like a broken pocket watch. There's this spring that sticks out of me, and that's from my childhood. And I wish it wasn't there, but it is. And it reminds me that I've been to hell, but the idea of hope and that life goes on and that I've got a new day is always exciting.
What about the bad days?
What about my bad days?
And how do you handle them?
I eat chocolate. I listen to the Black Eyed Peas. I listen to CIUT radio.
Yay. All right, and do you recommend those three things to listeners?
100%.
Chocolate, Black Eyed Peas, and CIUT radio. You heard it here first, folks, the way to deal with your bad days.
And as my character tonight would say, you bet, you baby.
Right on. So let's go to tonight. Donna, you've got your show opening, a couple of white chicks.
I look like Roger Rabbit right now. My heart's going ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. It's opening tonight. We're sold out. We are sold out.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Where is it? Where's the show?
It's in the Second City Training Center, downstairs in the John Candy Box Theater. And, hey, baby, I'm ready to be Hannah Mae Bindler. You betcha. Yeah, you bet.
If people want to find out more about the show or about you, what do they do?
They go to www.DonnaJoyWhiteman, DonnaJoyWhiteman.com.
And I'll have that site linked to our site. Donna, final question. Now that you've gone through this personal experience you've shared with us here in the studio, what have you learned about making career and life choices?
Be brave. Jump off a cliff with your life and have faith that you're either going to land in a soft place or grow little tiny blue turquoise wings, because you will. There's people waiting to catch you. Yeah. Be brave.
Amazing advice. Donna Whiteman, thank you so much for
joining us, Mark,
here on Career Buzz. Really appreciate you taking the time, especially the busy day here before your opening.
I got to go build the set.
Now, you did bring a song, and I want to ask you to set it up, but we're going to go to station ID first, and then we'll come back to the song.
Okay.
But what song did you bring and why?
I brought a song by the Black Eyed Peas called I Got a Feeling, because tonight's going to be a good night.
We will come back to that song in a moment. Thank you, Donna Whiteman.
You're great.
From the sea of businesses online, how does a customer know who's who? Modulusmedia.ca works with businesses and startups that are looking for the complete package.
Who was that? I hear they're good.
My cousin used them and her design is beautiful.
It starts with a professionally designed website that fits the contours of your business. Building in unlimited functionality, we grow as your business grows.
They say they can integrate video into our site.
We tie it all together with search marketing, effectively making your website a customer magnet.
I want to see some examples. Where do I go again?
Modulusmedia.ca. It's okay to stand out from the crowd.
Need a new website? Until April, just mention CIUT and you'll get it for $500 less.
CIUT can now be heard on channel 946 through Rogers Digital Cable.
Like what you're hearing and want more of it? Check out our schedule at CIUT.fm. We have over 80 unique programs we're sure you'll love. We're listener supported. CIUT 89.5 FM.
We're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. We were going to play Donna Whiteman's song. We're going to figure out some way to do it. If not today, then on a future episode, because we wanted to play Black Eyed Peas but we're thinking about that song and we're singing it in our own heads. So we're unable to play that right now. I do want to let listeners know about a couple of upcoming events. Career Cycles is hosting the Who You Are Matters Career and Life Clarification Game. It's coming up this coming Tuesday, March the 16th at 6:30 p.m. For details, check careercycles.com. We're presenting our holistic narrative framework for career counseling at two upcoming conferences, NatCon in Toronto, April 26th, and the Canadian Counseling and Psychotherapy Association National Conference on May 13th in Charlottetown, PEI. We will be airing new interviews from our Enriching Lives and Careers trip to Nicaragua that ran successfully last week. Stay tuned for the inspiring story of Ruvain, who runs a community center within La Chureca, the huge city dump in Managua, Nicaragua, where 1,200 people live and work. On to the second part of today's show. Jacob Lobachevsky is a fourth-year U of T Rotman Commerce student and project manager of the business plan competition for U of T's Students in Free Enterprise, or SIFE for short. SIFE aims to inspire a new generation of entrepreneurs at U of T and in the local community. Jacob is joined by two participants in the SIFE competition. Paul Weiss is an entrepreneur, stock trader, avid adventure seeker, holds a master's in business entrepreneurship and technology. Paul works as the CEO of DreamCube Technologies, a startup building solutions for iPhone and iPad. Vincent Chung started his own company, Shape Collage, in March 2009 and is now juggling the completion of his PhD in computer engineering while running his own company. Vincent is a second prize winner in SIFE Adventure and the SIFE Regional Entrepreneur of the Year. Welcome, the three of you, to Career Buzz. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
Hi, Mark.
So, Jacob, first of all, tell us what have you liked about being the SIFE project manager?
I like it a lot. And the reason being is that you can really get out your creativity and all the skills that I learned in school. Whereas it's teamwork, it's leadership, it's project management. It's really about creating opportunity and having the real impact, and that's what SIFE organization is really about.
And can you just give us a brief overview of this competition? And I know it recently wrapped up just some days ago.
Right. So it's a four-month entrepreneurship learning program, and we started back in November when we had our opening ceremony. We tried to build an awareness. We tried to build up an enthusiasm for the whole thing. And the structure was composed of three parts. It was the workshops, the mentorship session, and the competition. And at the workshop stage, we involve various corporate partners like KPMG, Pizza Pizza, CMA Ontario, McCarthy Tuttle, and they all came out with all this industry experience that were able to teach students the necessary skills. And in the mentorship session, in the mentorship component, we're able to bring out an experienced entrepreneur like Paul and other people that were able to bring out real life experience again and sort of guide those students that are just starting. And I think that in the long term, that will enable them to avoid some mistakes.
Yes.
And at the end, there was a competition, of course. Vincent was our second prize winner.
Yes. Vincent, congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell us how it felt to place so highly in the competition.
Oh, the competition really wasn't my main focus. It was really interacting with the other competitors, you know, getting feedback from the judges and really building a network opportunity. So at the end of the day, it wasn't really, the biggest concern for me.
And I said in the intro now, you're running this company called Shape Collage, and you're doing your PhD. How's that going, and what are you liking about that combination?
Well, I guess both of them actually give me a lot of freedom in terms of what I want to do. So my graduate studies goes towards, I basically decide what I'm going to work on, and which is the same thing when I'm running my own company. I've actually made it so that I've realigned my thesis work to align with my company. So
yes.
Kind of two birds with one stone.
Uh-huh. So, in fact, your work on your PhD is Shape Collage, is that right?
Yeah, and then combining a bunch of other stuff I'd done in the past.
Yeah, and do you want to just let us know, what is Shape Collage? What is it all about?
It's a software program that I made where you can take dozens or hundreds of your photos and create this arrangement of multiple photos together. So it's called the photo collage. The difference is that you can create these photo collages into different shapes. So you can, write a word or put the photos into the shape of a heart. And you can make these in about 30 seconds. And just in the past year, we've had 1 million downloads of the software.
Wow, that's amazing. C- Congratulations.
Thank you.
I was one of those million. I actually downloaded it in preparation for this interview and threw in a bunch of my Nicaragua pictures because I just led this trip last week, and I said, go. And it kind of animates the pictures for you and shows you what it's going to look like. And then, boom, out comes your collage in, like, it was less than 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's exactly what really motivated me, you know, having lots of these photos from a vacation or whatever and wanting to share them with other people.
Amazing, amazing product. We'll talk to you more a bit about it in a few minutes. But Paul Weiss, I wanted to go over to you and ask you how you enjoyed your role as a mentor in the SIFE competition.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's great to meet guys like this. I spent the better part of the last 3 years with an organization called the Ontario Centres of Excellence, helping promote and fund activities like this coming outside of universities and colleges here in Ontario. And, you know, more often than not, you meet guys like Vincent here doing their PhD or master's that actually have a really slick idea and, more importantly, a passion to actually go out and pursue that full time. And, you know, I've been in this wonderful capacity through this organization to actually help invest and give them money to file patents, to build prototypes, to go out and meet customers. And that's really my connection into this program run by Jacob here. And yeah, I had a great time, met a lot of really, really great people.
So are you one of those dragons? Like in Dragon's Den, are you one of those investors who looks around for great ideas and selectively invests in them?
Well, I guess in a way, yes. We use the Ontario Centres of Excellence actually runs various programs that help do things from encourage young talent, whether it be in the technical field, to educate them on the business background. We run programs in that space. What I was most engaged with for two of the last 3 years in Waterloo was managing helping to distribute funds through a market readiness investment where we could actually place startup funds up to $150,000.
Wow.
Into these projects. So we do have a high threshold. We see a lot of activities. I think at any given point, we have about 600 projects running here in the province. And those span both from startups and actually something that I think is terrific, which is industry collaborations, where we find academic groups, PhD master students with a particular skill set to help solve industry problems, to help support Ontario companies solve and build new product lines.
Right on.
And that's what we do.
And building up our innovative capacity here in the province, which gets talked about a lot, but where's the reality? So it sounds like you're at the forefront of that reality.
Absolutely. It's been a wonderful position, wonderful family.
And you're the CEO of a company called DreamCube. Tell us about that role.
Yeah, somewhere along the line, you know, you sort of see all this stuff and all this energy. And at a wonderful event that we run every year, Discovery, hosted in May, we actually have it coming up here May 17th and 18th, I ran into a group of UFT students, and they had a very slick accessory piece that plugged into the iPhone that brought infrared to the device, enabling it to be used as a universal remote. And I spent the better part of the last year working with this concept, this notion. The original UFT students have moved on to various jobs at Deloitte and Microsoft, but we were very fortunate enough to take some investment from some other pillar programs like Industry Canada, Mars, and OCE to actually build the prototype, which I'm hoping to have ready in the next couple of months.
So this product is about to launch.
Well, actually, yeah. You can look. There are, over the past year, it's interesting. It'd be nice to talk to Vincent about competition, but there's a lot of competition out there.
Yes.
that's sort of arise, and that's been an interesting challenge that's shaped our direction, certainly in the last 4 or 5 months.
Yes. You're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're talking to Jacob Lobachevsky, Paul Weiss, and Vincent Chung. And I'm your host, Mark Franklin. They were all involved in the Students in Free Enterprise competition that was just held just a few days ago here on the University of Toronto campus. Let's spend a bit of time hearing about how each of you came to be where you are. Vincent, can we start with you? Starting with what you did post high school, how did you get here to be doing a PhD in computer engineering in parallel with starting your own company?
I guess it's been a little while now. I did my undergrad at the University of Manitoba. I grew up in Winnipeg, so I did my computer engineering there. I think I just kind of stumbled into computer engineering. I didn't really know what it was or where it was going to go, but I knew I liked computers, so I went into it.
Hang on, I got to check with you on the stumbling, because we hear a lot of that on Career Buzz, and people seem to stumble or get lucky. And, you know, it's curious about that. Like, you almost sound as if it was purely by chance, but what was it prior to actually applying to a computer engineering program at the University of Manitoba that intrigued you about it enough to explore it?
Well, I guess my options going into university was that my dad wanted me to go into more of the business side because my parents run a computer store.
Yes.
My personal interest was that, I was good at math, good at science, and I liked computers. So the only two programs that I knew of in university were computer engineering and computer science. I went to some sort of engineering information session, and someone asked, what's the difference between computer science and computer engineering? And the people that were speaking just said, engineering is harder. So I said, I guess I'm going to go into engineering then. But I didn't really know what it was about.
It's funny how decisions get made. I mean, there it was, one little moment that, just made the decision for you between the two, and it was a response to a question. Was the guy or woman, was the person an engineer who answered that question?
Yeah, it was a professor at the university.
Professor of engineering, not a professor of computer science.
Yes.
All right, so you chose that. How did it go for you? Did you find that you liked what you had chosen?
Yeah, I was very successful in school, and I worked hard and, did well. I guess it was near, the tail end. I'm doing my undergraduate thesis work.
Yes.
Then I realized, research. I've never even heard of it before, really. So doing, novel research in kind of an academic setting is what then led me to go to grad school. I didn't really know what I was going to do after university. I guess I was too lazy to go look for a job.
Yes.
So I applied for grad school. I got into the University of Toronto, where I was partnered up with my professor here, Brendan Fry, from the computer engineering department. He flew me down here. I had a good interview. Interest seemed to mesh. So I came here, and I've been doing my graduate studies for the past couple of years.
Now, you just said you were too lazy to do a job search. Can we just go back to that? Now, let's consider we may have listeners here who are at the tail end of their undergraduate program, who are considering their options and trying to figure out, is it a good thing for me to look for a job? Should I continue with my studies because I really do like research? With some hindsight now and some ability to look back and understand the world a bit more than you did when you made that choice, what would you say to third and fourth year undergrad students about the choice between going and getting experience versus continuing into an advanced degree program?
I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to, doing what you love. You can't go into grad school if you don't like what you're doing, because you're not going to make it. Because you have to motivate yourself in grad school. So if you don't like, science or engineering or humanities or whatever you're going to study, it doesn't make sense to go to grad school. But it varies depending which department you're in as well. So in engineering, in computer engineering specifically, a graduate degree is valued in the industry quite
Yes.
highly. So, that was my decision to do that.
So, you're saying do what you really love to do, and I think it's probably really good advice, because for graduate study, it does take more running things on your own, right? Did you love it enough? And was it really just too lazy to look for a job, or was it really about a choice that you made because you knew you liked it enough to take you to the next level?
Well, I always, viewed myself as really trying to achieve my highest potential. I did well in undergrad, but I felt that there was still more to learn, that I can achieve. So I did. I really did love my work going in. Mm-hmm. I had a passion for
Yes.
it. I guess I got tired after a while, though. You gotta, you lose a little of that energy. You get a little, you get a little tired of the work, seriously.
Yes.
This is kind of why I started my company. It was just a side project, I guess. I was bored in between projects, and you know, I wanted to do something that I really enjoyed, I really loved, solved my own problem, and you know, I just had fun making it.
Yes. So as a business idea then, you know, sometimes people say be very proactive about your business idea, put a business plan together, you know, and do it in an organized fashion. It sounds like your business idea came more from a passion. Did you even have a business, an aspiration, hoping that this would actually turn into a product that you could sell and make a business out of it, or was it just a fun project?
Absolutely not. I had no idea where it was going to go. Uh-huh. You know, I started this just, like I said, because I liked it. You know, I made it. It ended up being really cool.
Yes.
You know, it created a product I had never seen before. So then I put it up on my website, and you know, people started liking it, and people were downloading it, giving me feedback, and you know, so I took it from there, and then I realized, you know, I should do something with this, actually run it as a business.
And so was it, as starting it as a business then, did you then think, okay, now I'm going to take it more seriously because it seems to be a kind of effective product and people like it, so let me see if I can actually make this into something bigger, be the new, the new Facebook guy.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend I'm going to be the next Facebook. You know, it's a very much of a niche product.
Yes.
But I think I have something where I can really run with it for the next little while. But yeah, once I did, really incorporate the company, started filing patents, you know, negotiating license agreements, really taking it seriously, that, you know, I want to, you know, optimize this opportunity that I have in front of me.
Yes.
Know, at the same time, learn all the business side of things because I don't have that background. So it's on the job learning and.
And do you have a business plan now?
Yeah, I have a business plan now, but it took about, I think, probably about a year and a half after I started to actually write a business plan. So,
was he your mentor? I didn't actually check that out. If Paul, were you Vincent's mentor?
No, Paul wasn't.
Okay.
I have a bunch of other mentors, but yeah. I have met Paul in the past,
yes.
And we've had discussions. And
yeah. So what does your business plan call for? What kind of business are you going to do with this product?
It's more just kind of outlines what are the next stages for my company in terms of product development or, extending partnerships with other companies and really just showing how I'm going to grow what I have now, which, is pretty good for what I have now, but making it more sustainable in the future.
Uh-huh. Patents are a big deal. That actually costs a lot of money. You got to invest in it. You got to get a patent lawyer. You know, where did you get all that money now and how is that working with your cash flow?
I got it from the University of Toronto. So I'm working with the Innovations and Partnerships Office here on campus. So they basically take research ideas and commercialize them. So, you know, I have a relationship with them, and they foot the bill for all the patents and, you know, filing incorporation papers and helping me along the way.
Uh-huh. And are they now partners? Do they have a stake in your business because of this investment?
They don't own equity, but there's a relationship with them.
Uh-huh. Interesting. That's great. So here at university campus, there's support for entrepreneurs in the sense that you're getting that support now and you're able to bring this idea to fruition.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. They're helping me. I also have advisors at Mars Advisory Services. You know, professors in the engineering department are helping me. Professors at the Rotman School of Management. People like Paul as well, just entrepreneurs in the community. So being a student, everyone really is happy to sit down with you and talk to you and
yes.
give you their advice.
Yes.
The thing that you have to learn, you learn very quickly after talking to so many people, is that you can't take anyone's advice, though, because they've thought about your problem for a whole 5 minutes, and they're fully willing to give you advice, but, you know, you've thought about your problem for 5 months. They've thought about it for 5 minutes. You know, you can't change what
yes.
you're doing because of that.
So in other words, you got to trust yourself
exactly.
and take the advice. Now, Paul Weiss is sitting here nodding his head up and down as you're talking about, you know, holding your own counsel. Paul, what do you experience when it comes to, you know, choosing, making choices yourself as an entrepreneur versus taking what appears to be good advice but might be contradictory to your own thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Vincent really touched on a lot of really good points. He's doing his PhD. He's flying around at doing competitions, attending conferences, meeting a lot of other support organizations. And you know, he's doing a lot of the right things, but he's got a limited amount of time. So he's got to make sure that when he sits down with someone, he articulated there, he can get his message across very quickly, decide whether or not the advice is valuable to follow up on and
yes.
spend time with that, engage in a capacity of perhaps bringing that person on as a mentor and as a connection. And you know, there are a lot of agencies out there that you can spend time with, and perhaps you have to decide whether that's a number one thing to do, or focus on your business and driving customers and stuff like that. So,
right on. Probably really really important to balance that and learning how to manage your time. If there are entrepreneurs listening to the show here with questions, maybe you have an idea of launching a product. We have three entrepreneurs sitting around the table here. I'm going to invite listeners to call in if they do have a comment or question as we continue our discussion. And you can, you know, ask any of our group here about their experience and your idea. So if you want to do that, our call-in number is 416-946-7000. Sorry, it's 416-946-7000 if you have a comment or question. Vincent, the big question about moving forward, I know lots of PhD candidates soon to graduate are thinking, what should I do next? Should I pursue an academic job search, find a job being a professor in a university, or should I go off and work or start my own business? What are your plans?
Originally, when I went into grad school, my decision was to eventually go into industry. So, you know, I've done internships at Microsoft Research and Google. And so it'd be more of a, you know, an applied version of doing research.
Yes.
I never really envisioned that I would work in a startup, run my own company, but having done so, it's been actually a lot of fun. And, you know, definitely after I graduate, which I'm hoping to be later this calendar year, that I'm definitely going to be continuing with Shape Collage because it's, you know, it's a very lucrative opportunity right now.
Yes.
And there's a lot of potential there.
And just as listeners are hearing us, and if they are sitting by their computers, give us the website so they can have a peek at it.
Yeah, so it's Shape Collage. So it's www.shapecollage.com, and you can take a look at the different collages that the software makes, and you can download it. There's a free version that you can use.
Amazing. So thanks for telling your story here on Career Buzz, Vincent. Paul, how about you? How did you get to where you're running your own business now? Give us a little tour of what happened to you post high school.
Yeah, I mean, grew up in a small town. It was always a bit different, running landscaping companies, renovating apartments for various investors, just working on my own. And that's really, I think, where the hunger started. Decided to go to business school at Laurier. Had a terrific time there. Questioned whether business was right for me or not,
yes.
But ultimately, you know, saw the degree through. And learned a lot of things about how to best articulate my passion to
yes.
other people
yes.
in my undergrad, I think. And I did take a job outside of my undergrad that brought me downtown Toronto, working for Nesbitt Burns, actually, as a broker, as an investment advisor with some stockbrokers downtown.
Now that sounds like a great job that most people coming out of an undergrad business program would love.
Yeah, it was really different. I mean, I always had that image of a suit and tie,
yes.
Working down in the big city, and that's what I did. And I was fortunate enough to land a position, and lasted about 10, 11 months. And I'd say half of that were excruciatingly painful, in the sense of taking the go downtown and working out of a cubicle. It really wasn't where I was at. And I could feel the passion just sort of draining out of me in this
yes.
in this job. Now, I learned a lot of great things, like how to stock trade. And that carried forward when I decided to leave and go back and do my master's, which, you know, I fully support the outside of an undergrad going and getting experience, but also recognizing when that experience has the time has passed and it's time to move on.
It's pretty quick, 11 months. How did people react when you got this juicy job? Probably all your peers at Laurier thought, gee, like, is he, first of all, wow, great, look at the great job Paul got, and now what is he nuts? He's leaving after 11 months.
Well, you know, I was a young buck. It wasn't that juicy. I was executing stock trades, and in my spare time, I had a phone book, Will Smith style in that movie, calling, you know, I must have called at least half the lawyers here in Toronto and to try and book a meeting for the broker I was working with. And, the time had served. I didn't want to pursue that direction, and school was a viable option.
So what did you study as a master's program?
So there's this great program I learned about at the University of Waterloo, which is I fully think is an amazing place to go back and hit the reset button. It's called a Master's of Business Entrepreneurship and Technology, MBET degree. And it's a one-year program that the goal is ultimately to start a business going through your master's. And it aligns a bit of an MBA style with a practicum style, where you form groups within the program and actually learn a lot about what it takes to build a successful company. And then you surround yourself with a wonderful network that they built up there in Waterloo. And I had a great time. I flew around the world pitching VCs,
VCs, for listeners who don't know what that is, do you want to just...
Venture capitalists, doing business competitions. I think what Jacob's doing here is wonderful. I mean, you really need to present a stage to bring guys like Vincent out. Vincent, I guess, had already built what he was doing and was already well on a successful path. But to take people that you know, can open up a laptop and start coding or soldering, or, you know, take out a soldering iron and build something, to actually get an idea of what it takes to take a product into sort of a business context.
Yes. For listeners who may be contemplating an MBA, I find it quite interesting that you did this other degree that, you know, I guess is in competition with MBA school. So it was called Master of Business Entrepreneurship and Technology.
That's great.
You know, what advice do you have for listeners about choosing between something like that versus a more traditional MBA?
I mean, it's a balance between real-world experience and going back to school. For me, I looked at it as a chance to hit the reset button and figure out where I wanted to go next. So it wasn't so much about the degree. Now, I like the degree. It aligned a lot with what I was interested in. I don't know. It just worked really well for me. I love school. I love school because it's a chance to go back and take a pause, hit the reset, educate yourself in a new direction.
And then finally, the move towards starting your own company, DreamCube. How did that come about?
Yeah, really, I ran into a bunch of passionate guys and decided to join the team. I had worked with a couple of startups prior to DreamCube. So I knew what it was all about, and I met a lot of great people in Waterloo and Toronto and here across Ontario doing this type of stuff, getting out there, taking something that they built and trying to sell it, which is really business 101.
And how are you feeling now as you're kind of building momentum in your entrepreneurial venture? Are you feeling hopeful? Are you feeling worried? Where is your emotional state at?
Well, you know, I've invested a year into this, and every day brings something new. So it's a willingness to be open, to reach out to other people, because there will always be something new that comes up. Now, I'm quite excited for what I think that we can accomplish in the next couple of months. And we'll see how that plays itself out.
And if listeners want to check out what DreamCube is all about, where do they go?
Well, we don't really have a website, but we do have dreamcube.ca, and you can sort of see some of the stuff. We haven't publicly shown a lot of the things that we're doing.
Yes. We're talking to Paul Weiss, Vincent Chang, and Jacob Lobachevsky here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Jacob, over to you. You're a fourth-year student here at U of T.
That's right.
In the Commerce program. How did you choose to go into the business program here, and how have you been finding it?
Well, for me, that's more of a complicated story because I was born and raised in Poland. I came over here. And before I came over here, I always thought that I would end up as a lawyer or a history teacher or something that I've
something of this kind because I had a strong passion for humanities. And that was actually my parents and my mentor that pushed me towards business. And I came over here to pursue this great opportunity overseas to see myself achieving great goals and success.
And so you came over here and you started the University of Toronto program like just a few years ago?
That was 4 years ago.
Amazing. And so you were a newcomer to Canada. You come in here. How did it all go at the beginning? How was the culture shock?
Well, it was an extreme culture shock, I must tell you, Mark. And that took me a while, but I developed a strong group of friends that helped me along the way. So, I mean, I settled down. I definitely see myself somewhere in North America.
And now you're in fourth year. You're going to graduate soon. It's already the month of March. If all goes well, hopefully you'll graduate soon.
I'm actually not graduating this year.
Oh, is that right?
I'm doing my co-op term at RBC Capital Markets. So I took a gap year to get some professional experience.
Great.
And I recommend it to everybody because that's a great learning opportunity as well as the chance to discover what you really don't want to do. And that's a stress on what do you don't want to do. In the future, right? So I will still have a couple months into my co-op term. I mean, it's like 6 months left. And then I'm going to graduate in 2011.
Yeah, I think it's great advice about focusing on what you don't want. Paul, your story illustrates that too. You know, there's no end of learning you get when you find something that you don't want because it just makes it absolutely clear what you do want.
Right.
You know, I think that's a really helpful piece of advice. So what's in your future now? When you do graduate, what do you want to do next?
I don't actually know. That's the, I think, the most exciting part because I still have to choose. I really respect what Paul does, and I see myself as kind of an entrepreneur, but see, I don't really have a business idea, so I really enjoy what venture capitals and private equity do with entrepreneurs, and that's sort of the career path I see for myself in the long run.
Yes. We're just about out of time for the show here. We're going to play Judy Marshak's track, A Circle Game, just quietly as we go on the outro. In a word or two, Paul, what have you learned about making career and life choices?
Realize when it's time to hit the reset button.
Yes.
And as soon as that happens, do it.
Vincent, how about you? What have you learned about making career and life choices?
I think you just have to do it.
Again, like take the initiative.
Yeah. Ignore all the roadblocks in front of you.
Right on. Or you know, ignore them or find ways to jump over them. And Jacob, you've had some pretty big life changes coming to Canada. What have you learned about making choices?
It's always about pursuing what you really want and learning along the way.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Career Buzz, the show that's all about empowering lives, enriching careers, and energizing organizations here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. Two other hosts of Career Buzz are Leanne Sachs at livinginthemoment.ca and Louisa Jewell at whydidyougo.com. Next week, Friday, March 19th, hear Louisa Jewell hosting, then I'll be back with you on March 26th. If you have any comments on today's show, please email me at mark@careercycles.com. Thanks to my guests Donna Whiteman, Jacob Leshevsky, Paul Weiss, Vincent Chung, and to our tech tailor. An MP3 of today's show is available from the Career Buzz link on careercycles.com. Catch Career Buzz every Friday at 11 a.m. here on CIUT.